Okay, it's ET night now on Coast to Coast. James Garman with us. James, of course, wrote the book, The Hidden Hand, the film, actually, and Lynn Buchanan. We're talking about Lynn's experiences as well. We'll be back in a moment with both of them on Coast to Coast AM. And welcome, James Garman with us, Lynn Buchanan. James, give us a quick highlight of your new film, Super Conscious, and what that will be about.
Well, it's about people who have special gifts and abilities, and it's about where we're going as a race in terms of where we're going to evolve into. And, you know, I'll have people that, like Uri Geller, who has definitely PK abilities that can, you know, bend spoons and keys, and then people who you can dig a hole in the ground and they can stay in a samadhi state without eating or drinking for 32 days, and then, you know, at exactly 4 o'clock, they'll wake up and then they'll speak to you. You know, it's people like that. And then, you know, a lot of it, I've been thinking about the super soldier program, how that is also an aspect of how we are advancing as a race in terms of bringing bionics into our bodies, and also interacting with computer systems, and also developing our psychic abilities. And this is something that, you know, people are being trained from childhood into adulthood, and they're being shown what they can do, and they're being used kind of as special agents. And I think that all kind of applies to accelerating our abilities and where we're going.
I think so too. I think this is an incredible time for people really to learn things about their subconscious and their abilities to do some incredible things now, don't you?
Yes, it's incredible time. It's amazing. Are you familiar with Sabina Ericsson?
No, I'm not. Tell me.
She's a Swedish national, and she has a twin, Ursula, but she's a woman that she ran into traffic 3 times in England, and she got run over. She was trying to kill herself,
oh my God,
but she couldn't kill herself. And then the paramedics came, and they wanted to take her to the hospital. And then she got up and she ran away, and she had just been run over by a truck, and they had took 6 people to restrain her and carry her, and they had to fight as strong as they could. They were all totally winded by the time they got her into the ambulance. I mean, she was actually physically capable of fighting 6 people after she'd been hit by one car and then another truck. And so you must think that there's some kind of bionics in her body, in her system. It's crazy. And then she was in jail for 1 day. And after 1 day, they let her free. And then she kind of freaked out and she killed a man, and now she's in jail in England. So it kind of, it's very, very bizarre story, but it kind of gives you an idea of what kind of, you know, technology is out there and how people are being engineered.
Yeah, no doubt about that. And Lynn, before we take calls, tell me a little bit about what is now called controlled remote viewing. What is that?
You'll see a lot of stuff on remote viewing out on the internet. And when the military program came out to the public, all the psychics, not all the psychics, but psychics started calling themselves remote viewers. And we had palm remote viewers and crystal ball remote viewers and tea leaf remote viewers. The difference between controlled remote viewing and all of that is all of that is mental. The controlled remote viewing that was developed for the military is physical. It's very much a martial art. We start off training people by having them take a pen and paper, and we say land, water, space. And as we do, they make a minimal graphic representation of land, water, and space, and so on. And just like kids in karate class will go ha ha, you know, and go through the forms, we have people do this until it becomes second nature. And what's happening is you're teaching the subconscious mind to talk to you through the body, to send you messages through the body. And it gets to the point, once it becomes second nature, where we can say, this is target 9705, describe it. And the hand will make a squiggle. And you can say, I don't know what the target is, but I know there's land and water. And look, there's something man-made because I have an angle here. And then once we get into the higher stages, we can teach the subconscious mind to actually put signals into your fingertips to give you the feel of something, into your ears to let you hear things, and, you know, into your, so that you can smell, taste, touch, feel temperature, and so on. And once we do this, we get you to where we can give you just the coordinates for a site, and you can actually physically visit all of the experiences that you would have if you were at the site. And as you, excuse me, as you describe those experiences and the physical feel, touch, taste, you can also see, you get visuals, you describe the site. And this is really what the military and now the police and businesses need and all that, because, you know, they know it's a building. They want to know what's inside.
That's right.
So you, as a psychic, you come up and you say, I see a building. Well, you know, that's not a help.
No. And most of us can do that.
Yeah. And controlled remote viewers can actually walk around through the building, go to the different offices, experience and describe the sounds, smells, tastes, textures, and everything else. But it's all done physically. You use your physical senses. You don't really do anything mentally. You know, there's no putting the envelope to the forehead and saying the answer is.
No, not at all. No.
And this is the difference between controlled remote viewing. Because controlled remote viewing is based on martial art techniques, it can be taught. A natural psychic.
Is it easier to teach?
It's easy to teach. Takes a long time to learn, just like any martial art takes a long time to master. But it's very easy to teach. Whereas, you know, psychic functioning, either you have it or you don't. And the idea that the military had was we were going to pull people out of every unit, teach them this, send them back to their unit, and they could tell their commander what's over the hill, where to point the guns, and all that. And the practice and learning time required for it, they finally just decided, look, let's have a team of remote viewers that will work for all the different units in the military.
Let's go to some of the calls now for both of you. Bob in Fond du Lac, Wisconsin. Hey, Bob, go ahead.
Hey, good morning, gentlemen. How are you doing tonight?
Great. Everybody's fine.
I was talking to your screener briefly. The other night I was watching like a five-hour DVD on Native Americans and the whole history of them, paleontology and all the way up. And I came to the conclusion, I mean, the observation that in less than three generations, we've practically destroyed everything that used to be. Now, what your guest is talking about tonight, could that be the wild card for us to help maybe in the next three generations turn this all around, clean our air, upper water, our ground, our soil, and put Mother Nature, Mother Earth back to that balance and advance it for mankind? And I'll take your answer off the air.
Which one of you two wants this, James or Lynn?
Well, I think that would be great if we could do it. I haven't seen all of humanity taking the good advice of doing that. I really think that some major catastrophe is going to have to happen to wake everybody up. I hate to see that happen.
You agree with that, James?
Yeah, I do. I think, you know,
if you look at the history of the Native Americans here in the United States, there's been a program to move children away from their parents and their homes. And they were, if they lived in Arizona, they were brought to California. And the whole purpose of that was so that they wouldn't learn their language and that they wouldn't learn their culture, therefore. And it took the power out of their culture and their teachings. And so I see that that's been watered down so much that, you know, a lot of times they don't have their original teachings. I'm not saying that they still don't have wisdom. Obviously they do, and their whole shamanic tradition is being practiced not only by them, but by many, many people all over the world, what they call, you know, walking on the red road. And I would like to see that in terms of all humanity walking on the red road. And I think it's happening. And, you know, Coast to Coast is part of that. You know, what Lynn is doing is part of that. But I think it does need a little more steam. It's like we're on the Titanic, and somehow you have to have a means to turn the ship around. Otherwise, that iceberg is right there.
No doubt. James' websites, by the way, are linked up at coasttocoastam.com, and that includes the Hidden Hand, the movie.com website, and Lynn's, of course, crviewer.com, and also an author, The Seventh Sense and Gravity Can Be Your Friend. Let's go to west of the Rockies, Wayne, American Falls, Idaho. Great town. Go ahead, Wayne.
Yeah, George, this comment is pretty much to both of your guests, but I told the screener that my experience happened 26 years ago, and I got to thinking about it. It's been 41 years. It was the summer of 73. Are you there?
Yeah, we're listening.
Okay. The summer of 73, a friend of mine and I were elk hunting in the primitive area in central Idaho, and it's really rugged country up there. And we noticed when we got there was an absence of any sound in the forest. There were hardly any birds or anything like that. We didn't think about it at the time, but we got caught in a rainstorm. It was a really early elk season, and we got caught in a rainstorm, and we couldn't find our way back to the campground where we were, and we were not dressed for it. So as it got colder and colder, we wound up, we couldn't build a fire because it was raining too hard, and we just had a really rough time. And so we wound up standing in the rain all night, and about, I don't know, it was really dark and really overcast, and all of a sudden we looked up and we thought we were seeing stars in the sky, but these stars were moving, and they moved around a bit, and we didn't know what to make of that. And after a while, the trees in the forest started lighting up with a really dim, it looked like dim flames, but they were no brighter than They're very opaque, you know, and not very bright at all. And a tree would light up with these dim flames every now and then, go right back out. And then when we looked up in the sky again, we noticed there were a lot more of these points of light that looked like stars, but they started swarming around. And after a while, an indeterminate time, these sparks come floating down from the sky. And after a while, we saw these dim shapes walking around in the forest. Well, there still wasn't light enough to where we could find the trail back to the campground. So we were just frozen there, you know, and we just stood and we watched all these strange things happening in the forest. But these things seemed to be going around doing things with the trees, and they got fairly close to us, but they didn't seem to pay us any mind. We were just kind of standing there watching these things happen, and we were freezing to death. We were both hypothermic, and I would have blamed it on hypothermia if my friend hadn't seen the same things that we did.
What do you think all this was?
And it was just really a strange thing. And it started snowing, and it started snowing enough to where the snow is collecting in the trail. And we actually find the trail, and we finally started walking back to the campground. Well, as we walked back to the campground, our teeth were just chattering. We were so cold. And as we were walking back to the campground, these things were doing things with these trees around us, you know, but didn't pay us much attention until we just about got back to the campground. And there was one of them was walking back and forth in the trail that led right into where the tents and the other hunters were. And I was afraid to go past this guy because he seemed to be, you know, the only one that was aware that we were doing anything. But we were freezing to death, and I said, well, you know, I just decided, well, we'd walk by him and look the other way and pretend we didn't notice him, and maybe he'd do the same thing for us. We walked past him, and as we walked by, he stopped what he was doing, and he turned around, and he watched us walk by, and then we made it back to my Jeep, started it up, warmed it up, you know, and I said a prayer, you know, and I thank God that, you know, for delivering us from whatever this thing was, what these things were.
What do you think they were?
What's that?
What do you think they were?
I believe they were gardeners. I mean, I've had 41 years to think about it, and I think they were like gardeners. I think they seemed quite benevolent, you know. They didn't bother us, and I don't believe, I've never really been hypnotized to see if I was abducted, but I believe they were caring for the earth in some way or other, maybe taking readings or
well, that's interesting. Lynn, do they do that? Do they come and do these exploratory visits?
Well, yeah. You know, the documents that I was allowed to see had all kinds of things, different activities that they would come, and they weren't all abduction experiences. They were things like that, where someone would just observe these beings that were doing things, and, you know, not always understandable things, but, you know, many of the reports were just observations where somebody would be caught like that and would observe things that were going on, and I mean, with clarity, you know, not in a stupor or not having just had a bunch of vodka or anything, you know. And yeah, there were a lot of stories like this where these activities would go on, and some of them were evidently taking things, some of them seemed to be putting things in. And
well, you know, as far-fetched as these stories are, I mean, you guys really are credible, and that's what makes this thing even more fantastic. We're going to come back. We're going to take some final calls with James Carman. He's the director, producer of The Hidden Hand, and Lynn Buchanan, the remote viewer, in a moment. On our next Coast to Coast program, The Secrets of the Universe, followed by those special open lines. Make sure you're part of the show. Welcome back to Coast, James Carman with us, Lynn Buchanan. James, I had a friend of mine used to work for the Minneapolis Star and Tribune. His name was John Carman. Any relation?
I've never met him. I'm sure that we're related. The Carmans come from England. And, you know, I was walking down London, and there was a pub, and it says proprietor John Carman, and I went in and I introduced myself, and it was a lot of fun. Yeah, I don't know them, but you know, they came here. Actually, my relatives bought like a tenth of Long Island back in the 1638.
Really?
Yeah.
A tenth? Wow.
A tenth. Yeah, right around Hempstead, Long Island. That was 120,000 acres, and you know, so we've been here a long time.
Well, let me tell you something. Had they still owned one tenth, you know how much that would have been worth today?
I do. I sometimes I drive through Hempstead and say, my God, maybe I should, you know, buy something.
I want that.
Start again.
Get it back. Let's take some final calls here for both of you. Mary is in Fayetteville, North Carolina. Hi, Mary.
Hello. How are you doing?
Good. Thanks for calling.
I had a question, and then while I was on hold, I kept coming up with other questions. But my original question was that I have a book on remote viewing, and I put it down when I got to the part where it said you need to practice in groups, because I didn't, you know, get a group together. I was just wondering if there was anything I could do on my own. But since you mentioned it was kind of like a martial art, I don't know what you had to say about that. But and then when I was on hold, I started thinking about different dimensions and how far along are we with holograms. But that's extra. Okay.
Sounds like one for you, Lynn.
Okay. Can you hear me?
Yeah, loud and clear.
Oh, good. Okay. Yeah, when we teach the controlled remote viewing, we teach people to actually perform the different roles of that are within a group. You have to have a trained monitor and a trained viewer and so on. And we teach the people to do it all on their own, because we know now in the civilian world that they're going to go home and they're going to be there by themselves. And so we teach them to work alone. Now, what we have found many times is that when they work in groups, there's what's called telepathic overlay, and one person will pollute the next person, and the group gets polluted. And so many times it's actually best to work alone. We call it telepathic overlay, but sometimes it's just pheromones, sometimes it's just unconscious micro movements that somebody will make, you know, like a poker tell, and it will pollute the group. And so many times it is best to work alone.
You know, Lynn, when you do remote viewing, I assume you know Paul Smith and those folks, right? Good people.
Yeah.
Good people indeed. Once a remote viewer, always a remote viewer. It doesn't go away, does it?
It's like a martial art. You have to practice. It doesn't go away, but you can get pretty rusty at it. it's also like riding a bicycle. I might pick up a sealed envelope and have a bad session because it's just a picture out of National Geographic or something. But if there's a missing kid, I'm going to have a great session. I don't care how rusty you get. When the need arises, your subconscious knows how to do this, and you're going to have a good job.
What has been for you the most satisfying aspect of remote viewing?
The most satisfying aspect of it for me is working police cases, working missing children, and so forth. Now, there have been special incidents and special targets where they were even more satisfying than that. But this, as far as an overall aspect, it's helping bring home missing kids. I tell you, there is no...
That's great. Good for you.
There is no feeling better than that.
Especially when it is a happy ending.
Oh, especially, yeah. You know, I've been amazed, and sometimes it just kind of breaks my heart when you do find that the child is dead and maybe molested and tortured and all that, and the parents will still thank you for the closure. It's just... You know, how do you respond to thank you in a situation like that? It's just heartbreaking sometimes.
Let's go to Donna in Lincoln, Nebraska. Donna, go ahead.
Hi, you guys.
Hi, Donna.
I would like to know if either one of the guys that's on the show tonight, if they knew anything about this, these alien people or these fallen angels or whatever you want to call these evil things or wherever they are. If they knew anything about these being attracted to negative blood people, you know, like negative blooded people have red hair, green eyes, long hair, blue eyes. I've asked everybody at work,
Lynn, I don't know.
You mean like A negative or O negative blood types?
Probably that.
I don't know anything about it. James probably would better than I would.
Do they attach themselves, James, to evil people?
Well, I mean, in terms of blood type, there is all blood types are they're interested in. But sometimes you hear Rh negative more frequently, which is kind of interesting because it's very rare.
It is rare.
I think there's an aspect to it that goes back into why are they interested in humans, and a lot of it I think has to do with our souls, our soul energy, and so I think it has to be with. In terms of if they're malevolent, trying to manipulate that soul energy or use it somehow for their own gain.
All right, we go next to Tim in Indianapolis, Indiana. Hey, Tim, go ahead.
Hey, thanks for taking my call. I just wanted to know if either one of you gentlemen have heard of the Urzai case. It's Urzi. I watched a documentary-type film on Hulu, and, the guy had, footage after footage after footage of pictures of spacecraft. And I tell my children all the time, they ask me, do you believe that there's aliens out there? And I said, listen, and then they ask me, do you think they're good or bad? And I said, it's like people. We're good, we're bad. It just depends on your intention.
Yep.
But thank you for taking my call.
Sure. And he is, of course, Antonio Urzai from Italy. And he has filmed, 1,700 UFOs. He's like Billy Meyer almost.
Yeah, I know him personally. And,
oh, you do?
Yeah, and I have his footage in my film, but it's also he came and he stayed with me.
What did you think of him?
Oh, I love him. He's a great guy, and we would leave the house in the morning, and he would say 4:30, and he says 4:30 we're gonna stop what we're doing and we're going to film them. And so then you're walking around and you're doing everything during the day, and then you have lunch, you come out of a restaurant and you're walking down the street, and then he just stops, pulls out his camera, and he points it up at the sky and he starts filming. And then you look and say, what is he filming? Look at it. And then you can see there's these two orbs that are kind of dancing with each other or interacting. And then when you see it on his camera, you actually see that there's two UFOs there, and it's kind of amazing because he has a real psychic sense that he feels physically in his abdomen when he's going to have this contact, and it's pretty dead on.
Okay, we go next to Lynn. Fred is at Farmington Hills, Michigan, my old stomping grounds. Go ahead, Fred.
Hello.
Hey.
Hi, George. You guys got a real good show going tonight. I had a question. Do either one of your guests believe that the alien autopsy film is a real film of a real extraterrestrial?
All right, we'll get your take on that. Now, I know the producer of that, the film, Bob Kiviat, who told me it was not real. But, James, are you familiar with that film?
Yeah, I think the American one is definitely not real. There was a Russian one that I think
that was weird.
People say that one is actually real, but I'm not a forensic expert, so I can't say for sure.
That was weird indeed. Lynn, how about you?
I have heard from the people who were at Roswell, that the real alien did not look like that. And
no.
So it was their, it was their deduction that was a fake. Yeah.
All right. Let's go to a few more calls and then we're out of time. Justin is in Longmont, Colorado. Hey, Justin, let's get you in here.
Hello. I'm sorry, James, were you the one who was abducted?
No, it was Lynn.
I'm sorry. Lynn, you were abducted many years ago?
Yes, uh-huh. Close to 35 or 40 years ago now, yeah, uh-huh.
Are you familiar with Stephen Greer?
Yeah, I know Stephen, uh-huh.
You know Stephen?
Yeah.
Yeah, I know Stephen too. Stephen's a great guy. And of course, he has done a documentary of a very little tiny creature that he just showed the last year. It's an incredible story. There's just so many, Lynn, there's so many incredible stories out there. And you too, James. So many just unbelievable UFO cases out there.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And a lot of dedicated people who want to get the answers. Do you think, James, disclosure will ever come?
Well, I think it is coming. I think this is a part of it. Obviously, I mean, you do your job every night. It's happening already as a process. If the secret government will disclose, I don't think they have any reason to or any desire to. And so I think if that happens, that it will have to be some kind of event. And I think probably we're the event, you know, how we're evolving and we're putting things together. I think, you know, that at some point in the future, it will be out a lot more in the open.
Yeah, I think so, too. Dave is in Raleigh, North Carolina. Hi, David, go ahead.
Good evening, gentlemen. I want to find out if remote viewing might be useful to people who are gamblers or play poker, and even to the extent that you could have a person off-site doing the remote viewing and communicating to me through a small headphone.
You don't want to do that. But,
they'll catch you. The casinos will catch you.
Yeah, but can you use the remote viewing for gambling? Absolutely, and it works pretty well. And generally, I would have a class once a year in what's called associative remote viewing, which allows you to predict things that, like what's coming up on the roulette wheel and so forth. We database every viewer's strengths and weaknesses, and if you get a viewer who's good at numbers, take them to the roulette wheel. If you get a viewer who's good at colors, take them to the roulette wheel, because you've only got three colors on the wheel. And, we tend to call Las Vegas the money store. the classes that I've taught, we end up going up to the Indian casinos up in Ruidoso. And the Indian casinos are famous for, you know, being for entertainment purposes only. You don't go there and get rich. But we've had one student break even, and everybody else has come back with more money than they went. So, yeah, it's a good application.
And a lot of it's about energy. Let's go to Craig, truck driving in Washington now. Craig, you still with us?
Yeah, I'm still with you.
There you go.
I just had a question with the remote viewer. Have they ever had a chance to visit the Library of Alexandria or the Hall of Records? I've heard it called before.
Stephen Schwartz did had a team that tried to find the library of Alexandria, and they had some success, yeah. Many of the historic mysteries have been delved into by remote viewers, and quite a few of them, in fact, have led to artifacts and such things that have proven them right. One of the problems with ancient targets is that you find out information that is probably true, but you have no proof.
The remote viewing, and again, I've always been told you can't really concentrate. You just got to let it happen and take some of the first images that come in your head. Is that true?
For some people, the fact is that's true mainly for remote viewing. For controlled remote viewing, the reason it's called controlled is because you are in complete control of the remote viewing. Natural psychics are generally at the mercy of their own talent, but a controlled remote viewer is in full control of the entire session. And so that would probably be true for a psychic. It's almost never true for a remote viewer, because the longer you stay on target, the more contact you get, the more information you get about it. And so generally your first impressions are just imagination, or a lot of times just garbage.
James Carman, for people who want to watch The Hidden Hand, where do they go?
HiddenHandTheMovie.com. It's now out on DVD, and I'm going to have a contest, and I'm going to give away some posters where a lot of the ufologists and experts in the film, they signed the poster, and so look for that. I'm going to give some of those away.
Very good, and we've got your website, Lynn, all linked up, but good luck with everything you continue to do, too.
Thank you.
Okay, Lynn Buchanan and James Carman reacting to remote viewing, the abduction cases, and, of course, his documentary on alien contact and the government cover-up. Make sure you're part of our next Coast to Coast program as we talk about the secrets of the universe, followed by those open lines, and anything happens with those. For Dan Galante, Tom Danheiser, Lisa Lyon, Lex Lonehood, Sean Laudasour, Stephanie Smith, Chris Burrows, George Knapp, John B. Wells, and Art Bell, I'm George Norrie, somewhere out there on Coast to Coast AM. I'll see you on our next edition. Until then, be safe, everyone.